This is ensemble member Tina Landau, and you're listening to the Steppenwolf Theatre Company podcast.
I have Lisa Damore here with me today, the author of the play Detroit, which will be opening our 2010-11 season. Lisa, you and I have known each other for, probably 11 years. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got started in the theater, about your early influences as a playwright?
Sure. Well, as I think you know, I was raised in West Virginia and New Orleans, and I feel like the landscape of both of those places really influenced my writing. A lot of playing outside as a kid and on the sides of hills and sledding and just running around in a really messy childhood life. In addition, I was raised Catholic. I had a lot of influences that came from both the ritual of the Catholic Church and the things like Mardi Gras parades and spectacle and dressing up. So, for example, my very first theater performance was a passion play that I put on the hill in my backyard in West Virginia, which, as you know, probably influenced a lot of my later site-specific work. And then I really think these early influences, you know, in the Catholic Church, there's this really crazy relationship between the word and action. So you're always hearing things like, only say the word and you shall be healed. And I feel like there's a way that language operates in my plays where the words that people say so directly impact the action of what's happening on stage, that I think just you just sort of fortunately or unfortunately see the Catholic Church kind of threaded through a lot of my work. Then I went to college in Mississippi, and I was influenced by a lot of Southern women writers like Eudora Welty and Flannery O'Connor, and I feel that Southern Gothic element shows up in a lot of my plays. And then finally, the doors were opened for me in terms of a life as a playwright when I went to the National Playwright Conference at the O'Neill Center when I was just out of college. And having grown up in the South and then gone to college in Mississippi, I didn't have a lot of models for how to live your life as a professional theater artist or as a writer. So it was a huge moment for me to realize I could live that life.
We've discussed many of your plays over the years, and one of the themes that runs through your work is the impact of the environment on the characters and on the story. Can you talk more generally about that influence of the environment, and then specifically with regard to how the outside world influences Detroit?
You know, I wonder if some of this points back to, you know, me being so immersed in my landscape in both West Virginia and New Orleans, but you always feel like the external world in my plays and performances is reflecting or affecting what's going on inside the characters as the performance moves forward. So there's this play of mine called 16 Spells to Charm the Beast, in which there's this woman who lives in this fancy high-rise apartment in a fictional Manhattan, and she's exiled this part of herself to this creepy, crappy apartment across town, and that part of herself takes the form of a beast. And throughout the whole play, this beast and the world of the beast is creeping closer and closer to her home. And in Detroit, the play takes place entirely in public space in their front and backyards. Well, public space, but a kind of guarded public space. Your backyard becomes a little bit private in certain cases. And throughout the whole play, their landscape is failing them. All of their furniture is breaking. They're falling through the porch. There's this feeling that their world is literally kind of falling apart or deteriorating around them, which is very much in tune with what's going on with the characters. And I think by the end of the play, it feels a little bit like a renewal. But there's this really almost slapstick relationship between themselves and this furniture and patios that they think are going to hold up but don't.
And there's some sense, too, that what is beyond that private or pub, sort of half-private, half-public backyard space, that there's some kind of wilderness that particularly Mary and Sharon idealize in a way.
Right. Yes, yes. The two women who are living in this kind of first-ring suburb, they get very obsessed with going camping. And neither of them are really wilderness types. So there's a whole through line in the play of this desire to kind of leave these backyards and houses behind and go live in the woods and kind of live off the land. But it's a very romanticized view. They actually have no idea what they're talking about. So
the season theme this year addresses our public self, our private self. Can you describe a bit about the journey of the characters? You've kind of started already, but the journey of the characters in Detroit in relationship to this theme, how are their lives a negotiation between the boundaries of these two selves?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, Detroit is about two couples, and one has been living in this suburb for a while, and on the surface, they seem to have a very stable life. Although the husband in the couple has just been laid off work, there's this feeling that their lives are going to keep on track. And next door is this couple who is a little bit younger and fresh out of a rehab program for substance abuse. And on the surface, they seem like the exact opposite of Ben and Mary. And so the play is really a process of them getting to know each other and figuring out how to present their public self to each other, and then the ways in which their private selves either reveal themselves or almost slip out. As I mentioned, the play takes place entirely outside of their houses, and there's this moment that I really like where Mary, from the more stable couple, goes inside the home of Sharon and Kenny, and she realizes that they have no furniture, that their house is basically empty, that they have nothing. And she's kind of shocked and a little bit scared to realize this like little detail of their private life that's behind closed doors. So.
And Detroit is incredibly funny. How does humor function in your work?
Wow, that's such a tricky question. It shows up in all of my work. And, you know, I hope that it functions as kind of a doorway, because I do think that often my plays, they either experiment with form in a way that's quite rigorous, or they may deal with a philosophical idea that most people in their daily lives don't think about every day. And but I really want all of my plays and performances to be accessible to a wide range of people. And so I hope that the humor kind of breaks the ice and helps welcome them in, and also makes them laugh.
It definitely makes you laugh. Do you want to talk maybe just for a minute about any particular inspiration for Detroit, like where this play emerged? I know you wrote it really quickly. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what maybe where the idea came from? Or
You know, I don't know that there's a single crystal moment that I can point to, but I've been really interested in this idea of what happens when two people from entirely, or several people from entirely different walks of life come together and allow themselves to change each other. Because I think most of the time we surround ourselves by the known and don't change. So I'm really interested in these instances when we kind of meet someone that we consider to be the other and allow ourselves to be affected by that. I've also been, you know, it was several years ago, maybe even like 8 years ago, that I read a couple of articles about the sort of earliest suburbs that surround American cities and how literally the materials that were used to build those houses are on the verge of deteriorating. They have a shelf life. And that it's just this huge problem about what to do with these structures, and then who gets to live with them, live inside of them, you know, once people decide, oh, these houses are falling apart and I have enough money to move into a bigger house, you know, then the neighborhood becomes quite poor and a different kind of neighborhood. So it's an interesting and problematic phenomenon that I'm really interested in. So.
Just to shift gears a little bit, exciting for us here at Steppenwolf, not only are we going to produce Detroit to open the season, but we also have commissioned you to write two plays over the next 2 years. We have this really exciting Mellon Foundation program funded by Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, and it allows us to commission four writers, and each writer gets a chance to write two plays for the ensemble. Can you talk a little bit about what it means to be commissioned to write two plays versus one, which is the more norm in the field?
It's a fascinating opportunity. I don't know that anyone's ever had this opportunity before. It's great. These first few days, you know, I've been here for several days meeting the ensemble and getting to know the theater. And there's this feeling that I can try and write a play, and hopefully it will be the right fit at the right moment, but you never can tell if that's going to happen with a theater. And so to be able to have this amount of time, several years, to get to know a company and figure out if one of these two plays, or maybe both of the plays, is the right fit is really an amazing opportunity. And it's very freeing as a writer. I feel very much like Steppenwolf has invested in me as a writer, and they're interested in what's going to happen to me in my writing in the next 2 years, rather than just sitting there waiting for me to turn in my play.
So. And it's really exciting for us to be just at the very start of this process. Now, you're new to the Steppenwolf family, and mm-hmm. Detroit will be the first play of yours that we've produced, and also new to the ensemble. You have been here over the last few days watching the ensemble perform in various capacities, reading your work and seeing things on the stage. Talk about the challenge or the opportunity in your mind to write for an ensemble versus just writing a play.
Mm-hmm. It's quite an opportunity. I'm so struck by the sense of history in this group of actors. And because they know each other so well and trust each other so much, they're so incredibly versatile. In the readings of my plays we've been doing over the last couple of days, we've intentionally miscast some of the roles. So all of these actors in the Steppenwolf ensemble have been playing parts that they wouldn't normally be cast in. And they were fantastic. Like, it's unbelievable to see their range. And so that opportunity to write for these incredibly versatile actors is really, really exciting for me. And then I think the challenge is maybe actually just starting that first play, because it's a little intimidating as well to write for these actors that can almost do anything. Just starting and wanting to write a play that lives up to their potential is a big task.
What's your process when you sit down to write something new? We're in this grant. We're hoping to bring our audiences into a bit of the process of the playwright. Can you give us a little window in?
I can try. It's different for every writer, and I'm a very intuitive writer. And, you know, every time I finish a play, I kind of throw up my hands and go, well, that was my last idea. I'm not going to write any more plays. But then, of course, I've written like 15 plays. So I often don't know quite where the next play is going to start. And I really work to just open myself to pretty much every influence when I know that I'm getting ready to start a new play, whether it's articles that I read or people that I meet, images that I see, to see what is going to be the spark. And I often know a lot about the opening and closing image of my plays when I begin, and not a whole lot about what happens in between. So that's always the kind of adventure of seeing how we're going to get from point A to point B. I also tend to, when I start the play and when I'm off and running, will do things like surround myself with a collage of images that relate to either the conscious or unconscious world of the play, to kind of keep me company as I keep writing. So,
and can you talk a little bit about piecing together a life as a playwright in 2010? My million-dollar question: would you recommend playwriting as a career choice?
I would. I would recommend it as a career choice, but I actually think that you really can't equate the success of your plays to financial success. I think that it's, you know, there's a handful of playwrights that make their living from getting their plays produced. There are a lot more playwrights who make their living from a combination of teaching, commissions, awards, and getting their plays produced. And then there are a lot of other renowned playwrights who, you know, don't make their money from any of that, and who have an entirely different career track and are still writing plays. And it's really important to remember that all of those are valid options, and that when you're starting a career as a playwright, it's really a practice that you're trying to find your way into and find your own relationship to. And it can be really amazing once you let go of those kind of conventional expectations of what success is.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Really appreciate your time today. For more information on Detroit or to learn more about Steppenwolf Theater Company, please visit us online at steppenwolf.org.